evening and welcome to What Should I Watch, episode 25. With me, I've got Mike and Mark. Say hello.
Hello.
Good evening.
Mike. Yeah. And yeah, we've got a jam-packed podcast this evening. We're going to talk about Reacher, Pam and Tommy, Moonfall, the Tinder Swindler, and a few other bits and pieces, which will probably hit straight up as soon as the guys tell me how their week went.
So, well, can I just say one thing first of all? What I think of it, when I mentioned to everybody that I was going to review the Tinder Swindler this week,
yeah,
I pronounced it Tindler Swindler.
Okay.
Right? Which maybe even sounds better, but anyway.
Sounds fluffy.
I made a mistake, right? I made a mistake and I said that. And I felt bad because I go, come on, like, you're meant to be an amateur professional here.
Yeah.
And but in the Tinder Swindler, someone on the movie says Tindler Swindler and no one corrects her. And I went, see? I looked around, yeah. I was watching on my own. There was no one there, but I still did. Look, see? It's easy.
I never come to judge, eh?
So that's how my week went anyway.
Let me see, what else were we up to? I did a bit of lifting at the weekend.
How'd you done?
Good. Set a new national record. Can't be unhappy with that. So
irritatingly strong bastard then, yeah.
Yeah, he's so annoying.
Yeah, I know.
And as long as you don't say your age, your weight, or what country you're in, no one know who you are.
Exactly. Yep. heading for Hungary now for the Europeans. I have my hotel booked. Just waiting on to find out what day I'm lifting so I can book my flights.
Yeah, very good.
Can't wait. Excellent. Yeah.
You can help to secure Europe's borders as well. Put up a bit of fencing on your head.
Yeah. Won't be that far over. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. I believe the food and the beer are fantastic. What's it called? Ukraine? Ukraine in my head now. Bulgarian pin. I thought you'd know this.
Oh, sorry, I start and ended Poland. Okay,
there's goulash and something else, yeah. Grant. Anyway, looking forward to it. So, what do we start with?
Well, do you want me to let you know how... well, I have a correction to make.
Okay.
From 2 weeks back.
Possibly an apology?
Oh, fuck no. Jesus, no.
He hasn't been able to sleep in 2 weeks. Come on, tell us.
As a very good friend of mine used to say, I've been wrong once in my life. I thought I was wrong once in my life, but I was mistaken. my apology, or not my sorry, not sorry, is I forgot all about season 2 of Servant.
Oh,
okay. So when I thought she disappeared or been kidnapped, that was the end of season 1. So the fact that she's back in the house makes perfect sense. I went back and I watched the end of season 2 and I went, oh, that's what happened. Now I get it.
Okay. Very
good.
Still
playing in your mind, obviously.
poor old Mark, you couldn't sleep for 2 weeks, like I was saying. So tell me about the Sheridan Tapes finale, Mike.
Yeah, this has totally taken over my life for the last 2 weeks.
Mm.
I got through 26 episodes.
What?
Yep. It's absolutely, I couldn't stop.
Tell us again, some quick synopsis. What are the Sheridan Tapes, or what is it?
Okay, so it's a podcast radio drama type thing, and it's following a detective in the States who is assigned the duty to try and track down a horror writer who's gone missing. And all he has to go on is a set of audio tapes that were found in the missing girl's van. And so the basic conceit of the show is it's this cop listening to these tapes and trying to figure out what led up to the disappearance of this woman and possibly how to try and find her, whatever. But apart from being a horror writer, she also spent her spare time ghost hunting and looking for monsters and that kind of thing. So a lot of the audio is her going into haunted houses or fucking Bigfoot country or whatever.
So is there a guy in the studio with a really squeaky door?
Yeah.
Did they go on horses and your man's in there with coconuts?
Yeah. Braves are often, yeah.
Is it that kind of thing? Is it like old school radio drama? Is it?
Yeah, very much
very
so.
Cool,
yeah. The the sound effects are wonderful. They really did a great job on it. It really helps to immerse you into the whole thing. And I'm starting to think like there's so many good radio dramas these days, I think it's actually better than TV in a lot of cases, because you don't have you can't hide behind special effects and stuff like that. Mm. It's really all you have is the story to keep somebody going. And I think they did a brilliant job in this. So what they do is, because it's an independent production, so it's not like you get a Netflix series and you're contracted to deliver 8 episodes, 48 minutes each, and dotted lines, this is how it has to be.
Yeah.
So they basically let the story grow and take it like a slow meandering river.
Oh, cool. So it finishes when it finishes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Some episodes are 20 minutes, some episodes are 40 minutes. Mm. It just depends on how that particular story makes sense. And they don't let it go too far ever. They take it as far as is entertaining, and then they leave you. And there's always a hook then into the next one to see what's going on. But I found myself listening to them 2-3 at a time, often going to sleep. Brilliant for going to sleep, except for the nightmares. I ended up finishing season one, and I've been disappointed with so many endings of really good series in the last 12 months. It was really nice to have an ending that was like worked. Kind of had you set up. I'd really like to see more of this. So I think the season two and season three is just started.
Very good.
So I'm definitely going to be following on that.
How is it in comparison to the, what was the name of the zombie podcast that we interviewed the lady from?
We're Alive.
We're Alive, yeah.
It's, I'd say it's of comparable quality, but a completely different genre. This is all ghosties, goblins, monsters, that kind of thing.
Oh, right up. Yeah, that's your kink, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Listening to it in a bat full of beans.
Yeah. but I would recommend anybody who likes that genre, give it a go. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see somebody telling a good story and not be hurried about it. They just, you know, take the value of it and go with it. So high praise.
Very good. Very good. All right, cool.
Mike likes the ending, shocker.
I know, yeah.
Mark that down in your diaries. The first one here.
Today was the day. So another one of my faves came back there recently, Steve. Raised by Wolves season 2 dropped on HBO last week. They started off with, I think, 2 or 3 episodes dropped at once. Mm. So I got through the first episode anyway. Mm. And it's, God, I love that show.
Yeah.
So it's produced by Ridley Scott. It seems to be set in the Aliens universe. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you why in a second. But the basic background is humans got so religious that they wound up in wars that killed everybody. Mm. Right?
Okay.
And this group, this one guy and a group of people sent 2 robots away with a ship full of embryos to repopulate civilization in a different world.
I remember this.
Yeah,
yes.
I remember it too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So this is the one that I said people were talking about on the internet, like it had something to do with the Book of Enoch. And that's when we realized that you were reading the Book of Enoch in the original fucking Greek or something.
In Latin. Yeah. Yeah.
Some nonsense like that, like only one people in a lifetime ever does. Like you're the intellectual equivalent of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Once in a generation. A slayer is born. He will read the Book of Enoch. So anyway, things got fairly hairy at the end of season one. The mammy robot gave birth to a snake that can fly.
Oh, okay.
And there's major twists all over the place. So, a new bunch has arrived on the planet, basically. Right. And they're trying to integrate with that group and reconcile their various differing belief structures. And at the same time, there was a group of people from the first season that were nearly like the antagonists for season one.
Right.
Right. There's kind of three disparate groups. They all have their various motivations. But it's good. It's such good TV. I really like it.
Oh, okay.
And one of the kids that they had, that the robots brought to the planet, is older now. His voice broke over the since the first season came out, right? Mm-hmm. But what they've done is, and I didn't notice this in the first season. I should really go back and check before I say this, but no, that's far too much research.
Yeah. Right?
He's now speaking using the diction and the tone of the father robot. The father robot is a very specific way of talking. Mm-hmm. And he's a bit like Data from Star Trek Next Generation in that he wishes he was a real boy. So he's always trying to tell jokes to the kids and stuff. And they're pure dad jokes. Like. But because of that, he kind of has this affected, jolly way of talking. Right?
All right.
That the mother robot is a kind of a respect murder, death, kill robot. Right? It was a robot that if you absolutely positively had to kill every last motherfucker in a continent, you sent her, right? And they turned off all of her weapons and gave her six nipples, which is where the wolf thing comes in.
Right. Busy lady, yeah.
I know, yeah. But so the son now is talking like the dad. I think it's class because that is exactly what happens. Like, also, he was the only person that child talked to for years. So of course he's going to talk like him. He's only one other person who's a murder, death, kill bot. He's not going to talk like her. Yeah. Every so often she flies up in the air and screams at people and like kills them.
Oh, wow.
A bit like my old one.
So recommend it.
Well, you need to be into high concept fantasy. The reason why you can see it's in the Aliens universe is all the robots bleed that white milky stuff that the aliens robots do.
Nice touch.
Yeah.
So they could, if they wanted, they could link it up. I don't think they will, honestly.
Is but there it's any, like any it has, rogue double mouth?
Any what?
Any rogue double mouth floating around with extra teeth coming out just to get their sandwich in?
Oh, no. No, nothing like that. But it's good. But like, if you liked, what was the one that wasn't very successful at the box office? Maybe in my research here as well.
The one in the monastery when
Fassbender was in it. The one Fassbender was in.
Oh, Prometheus.
Prometheus.
Yeah.
Reminds me a bit of Prometheus. Mm. Reminds me a bit of that. Kind of tonally, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's good. I recommend it.
Okay, cool.
I meant to ask you, Mark, actually, you being somebody who's good at saying, what should I watch? A friend of mine, I hadn't been in touch with for a while.
Yeah, don't lie, Mike.
Just the one.
Just someone you know.
he was in touch with me, and he was shocked and appalled that I hadn't bothered to watch The Boys.
All right.
Oh man, it's brilliant. You gotta watch it.
That's pretty well what he said, but I wanted a second opinion.
It's so amazing.
So I think it's on season 3 now.
No, don't go near there.
There'll be monsters yet.
Well, Steve and I disagreed about this, as Steve and I do about many things.
Yeah.
But Steve is wrong.
I was very wary of it because it seemed a bit too superhero-y to me.
Oh, no. But imagine if superheroes were actually real. Imagine if they were actually real, right?
Imagine if they're assholes.
Marvel movies.
Imagine if they're assholes. That's what you do. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but that's what would happen though to real people. So the primary conceit of
Look at The Rock. I don't agree.
Is Superman. Mm-hmm. Superman is not a real person because if you have an infinite power, you become an infinite asshole. Right? And that is what Homelander is in this. Right? And he's been corporatized, right? So he essentially works for a company. Mm-hmm. So they present him as Superman, mm-hmm. but behind a really like one cell thick veneer, he's not that at all.
Okay.
And it's really interesting. And of course, like, because he has all this power, everyone is terrified of him, but to control him, you can't let him know this. Like, I think it's brilliant. Anyway, I think they do a really good job of managing that tension because there's humans in this that have figured out that the superheroes are assholes.
Okay.
And they're trying to fight back, basically, but they spend their whole time terrified because if Homelander gets an X9 or near them, or any of them get near them, they don't have a chance. So
it's dark.
You talk a good talk there, Mark. I might have to give it a watch.
Do. See if you get past the episode.
I'll tell you what, Mike, right? Watch Boys, right? And if you get past the first 15 minutes of the first episode of season one without dying laughing and going, this is great, right? Because there's one particular scene we can talk about next week. I won't spoil it for you now. But if you don't come back next week going, I can't believe this is on TV, it's amazing, I'd be very surprised.
Okay, challenge.
And then we'll have confirmation that Steve is wrong.
that's the most important thing.
That is what it's about, I'm afraid.
Looking forward to that episode. So anyway, speaking of space stuff, Moonfall. Watched that this week.
We did.
Tell us about it, Mike.
So this is Halle Berry and what's that, the fat guy from Shaun of the Dead.
You mean from Game of Thrones?
He was in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he's from Game of Thrones. John Bradley.
Yeah. John Bradley.
Yeah, and Patrick Wilson, yeah.
Yeah. So
Patrick Wilson.
Basically, they were astronauts. Pretty good astronauts. Christ, the confidence. So around 2010, I think, these pretty good astronauts have a disaster in space, after which the alpha male is disgraced despite his heroic actions. The shady people in suits decide they need a fall guy. So this all-American hero astronaut is turned into public enemy number one, and his son says, "You're not a hero anymore, Daddy. I hate you. I'm going to be a really troubled teenager now. So fuck you."
Like they all do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So time passes, and Mr. Bradley, who is a part-time scientist of sorts, figures out that there's something really, really wrong with the moon. And of course, everybody thinks he's a complete nut job because he's no connections to anybody important.
He doesn't even know the man in the moon.
That's it, yeah.
I think the man on the moon has a barring order on him.
Yeah. So in the intervening time, Halle Berry has gone on to become somewhat important in NASA. And our alpha male is now a janitor and on the point of eviction because he can't pay the bills and whatnot. So it's things aren't going well. And then it turns out that there is actually something with the moon, and we've got to take care of it. And it goes from there.
Yeah. So.
Sounds exciting, doesn't it, Steve?
So it's a bit of a disaster of a movie and a disaster movie.
I mean, what's the worst going to happen if the moon fell out of orbit?
Yeah. So it's, This movie belongs in 1994.
Yeah.
This is like a Hollywood by the book disaster movie. I know have they not learned their lesson? What was the name of the one with the, it snowed a lot. And then.
It was a 12 below or something like that?
And your man was like, stay there, I'll come and get you. You know, to the sun.
And he's travels 4,000 miles away.
Yeah. And he travels and has all these adventures and the sun's grand where he is, you know, that kind of way. And your man nearly dies 15 times on the way. It's nearly exactly that again, it's ridiculous. It's out there with its theory. Now, the theory is pretty cool, actually, if it was a comic book.
Yeah.
But they presented it as sort of like, this could happen kind of thing. Mm-hmm. No, it couldn't. You know, I just thought the story was ridiculous. I thought the effects were, like you said earlier, this was a movie about effects rather than story. They have the astronauts. Of course, all the astronauts have someone that they care about who are going to be murdered, killed, death, in the face if they don't, fix the stuff.
It wouldn't be terrible if they didn't survive, man.
I know. It's like
doing it for the people back home.
If I don't go, we'll die. If I go, I might die. You know? But Dad, you can't go. But well, you know, the options never liked you anyway. Probably, you know. Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, it's all that, hey, honey, all those, you know, I love you, you know, on the phone. Yeah. You know, it's like how, that was the other thing. There was things like, there was a lot of phone use in this where the, you know, everything else was down. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how the satellites survived. But anyway, it's just, it's ridiculous from the outset. It's just ridiculous. It's wooden as well. It's real slap your forehead scenes after scene, you know.
I know I felt when I was watching it that I was looking longingly at a screwdriver that happened to be on the chair beside me, and I wanted to poke it in my eye.
The best actor in it was the NASA director, Stephen Bogart. He was playing director Albert Hutchington, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. And he had the right idea. He was just like, as soon as he saw the moon fall, he's like, right, fuck this, I'm out of here. He was just like, you were after my job, here you got it, you know. Absolutely, because all the earlier attempts had failed. And who else was in it? Donald Sutherland, he popped up as well.
Yes, that's right.
And the other thing was Michael Pena.
Mm-hmm.
God, Michael.
How the mighty have fallen, huh?
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so Michael Pena plays a new husband to the alpha male disastrous astronaut's wife, you know. So, yeah. Of course, there's banter between them, but it's just really painful. And of course, the son doesn't, you know, you're not my real dad, you know. please.
Imagine if he was to redeem himself at the end, though.
Could you imagine that happened?
Yeah, you know, wow. That would really, you know, lift your soul.
I know. This is terrible. This is terrible. Like, if it didn't have the budget, it would be B-movie. Like,
It just has story by committee written all over
it. Doesn't it?
Oh, God. And when they had the big reveal on what the threat was, I was banging my head off the wall. I was like, could you not have thought of anything better?
Anything.
Literally anything.
Now, I had The Day After Tomorrow, that was the name of it. It's funny, the writer of The Day After Tomorrow is Ronald Emmerich, who's the director of this. He also wrote Independence Day Resurrections. He also wrote Godzilla. He also wrote the original Independence Day.
So he's a genius in our time.
He's a genius of... He used to do Stargate Universe stuff. Stargate Atlantis.
I love Stargate Universe. I love Stargate Atlantis.
Yes.
Hey, what about this for Ernie?
You have to remember...
Aquaman started out in Stargate Atlantis.
Yes, but you have to remember that was like 2004. You know, Stargate SG-1 was the 90s. You know, so this is, Godzilla was 98. That's where this stuff belongs, you know.
I was actually thinking while watching it, there's just enough plot here to fill up an average episode of Stargate.
Probably.
But that's at 45 minutes, not 2 hours in.
It's 2 hours, you'll never get back. I'm sorry.
It's some of the most horrendous pacing I've seen in a long time. It is like, let's spend 20 minutes bigging up this little kid that will be of absolutely no importance to the rest of the story.
Yeah, what the hell was that about?
I don't know. Anyway, shocking.
It's shocking. Like, it's a three, you know. It's that bad. It's a terrible, terrible movie. It should be on the Raspberries list now. So, anyway.
Yeah.
I think we agree, yeah. What do you think, number wise?
I think three is probably a bit generous.
That's what you really feel, Mike.
I mean, seriously, I felt like I had been assaulted after watching this movie.
Yeah, it's desperate.
It was that bad. As you say, I'll never get those hours back. So I can, with hand on heart, say that nobody should watch this.
What should I watch? Not bloody this. That's right.
That's right. So people should not watch
Moonfall.
Moonfall. Speaking of what you should watch, though, or if you haven't listened to me already, now is the time. I lost my place. I don't know. Here it goes. I do not know what the word Texas means, but to me, it means magic. So I am, of course, talking about 1883.
You're still watching it?
I love it. It is best show on television. Hmm. 1883 tells the story of a bunch of Europeans trying to get to the last bit of the Wild West that's left. Mm. So they can claim it as their own and start families and giant farms and all the rest of it. They're being led by Tim Elliott and, McGraw. Tim McGraw. Mm. Sam Elliott and Tim McGraw. I got them the wrong way around, sorry. And Isabel May plays Elsa, the daughter of McGraw, and she presumably survives this because she's the one doing monologues at the start and the end of every episode.
Yeah.
And it's so good. There was a gunfight the most recent episode. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that watching this show, I nearly got whiplash. My immersion was broken so badly.
Really?
It was really bad. And like this show, the reason I like it is because I feel like I'm seeing the way things must have been back then. Because it was, you made a mistake in the Wild West, you were dead, right? There was no mercy, right? In this episode, it seemed to me like people made quite a few mistakes and got away with it. There was a gunfight, right? And you know the way in the A-Team, nobody really ever got hit by bullets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were using the same ones. They must have found cash left over from the 80s, etc. Yeah. Put these in the guns and see what happens. Whole load of bad guys on horses running toward them, right? And the bad guys couldn't hit them far away, which I accept, right? Mm. But the bad guys ran through the middle of them and still couldn't seem to connect. And I was going, come on, come on. But to be fair, that was the only thing. That was a brief moment where I was going, I don't know if this is real. It seems to me like the motivation for driving through the middle of these people is weak. I think if I was involved in this gunfight, I'd probably circle around the outside until people were dead. I'm just saying tactics. But anyway, but it's apart from that, it is another great episode.
How would it compare with something like Deadwood?
It's up there, Mike. Mm-hmm. And Deadwood is one of my favorite shows. Like, it's missing the iambic pentameter of Deadwood. There is no Indian skull in a bag, for them to converse with. Mm. But apart from that, it's of similar quality. The writing's really good. I think I mentioned the last time I talk about this nearly every week. Mm-hmm. But La Monica Garrett is standing out more and more as Thomas. He's a black soldier from the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And he's started to kind of get involved with one of the what are they called? They're not pilgrims, are they? What do they call these people? Pioneers. One of the pioneers.
A Romanian lady, was it?
Yeah, with the Romanian lady and his character. It's just that whole development is really, really good. But anyway, I think it's brilliant. I think if you're not watching it, then you're probably wasting 45 minutes of your life every week.
That you could be spending breezy.
Nice way to put it, yeah. Very good. Tinder Swindler, speaking of love.
Mark. Yeah. So the Tinder Swindler, right? Tinder. Ironically, I turned on Morning AM. Is that what it's called? The Philip Schofield show?
No idea. Is it? All right.
One of the girls from the Tinder Swindler was on it today.
No way.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yeah. So this comes from...
First or second girl? Just out of curiosity.
I didn't see it, but I was aware. Donna told me she was on. So I came in, call me when that girl is talking, but at that stage she'd already been on.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to see it. I continued to do my actual work. So it's from the same people that made Don't Fuck With Cats on the Internet, which is also a Netflix documentary that I think we all really enjoyed.
Yeah.
This one, instead of being a TV series, is just a movie. It's, I think, about an hour and a half long. And it is about a number of girls who were swindled by a serial con man who used Tinder to find his victims, essentially, and then starting to swindle these women out of money, basically. That's the broad strokes of it. So I can jump in if you want.
We need to talk about this on two fronts, I think, as a documentary and as...
The documentary, right? Yeah, I was really worried watching the first 20-25 minutes of this. Mm. Because what I hate is when people have no content and they have to inflate it into a movie. And I was really worried that this was it. No, it isn't, I don't think. After watching the whole thing, I think I was glad I stuck with it. But at the start, they're just talking to one girl and they were showing a few things and I'm going, that's stock footage. That is not like, you know, she wasn't in this place when this bit of footage was filmed and she wasn't here. And they were using a lot of that. Like, and then they said something about diamonds and they showed some stock footage of diamonds. And I went, come on, is this what this is going to be? You know, we're going to fill out everything because we don't have actual footage. But gradually they started to use actual footage from their relationship. And there started to be more video of the Tinder swindler and the girls and all that. And the story then also started to pick up speed. And then once they kind of find that pace, I felt like they kept it right through to the end. And it did not say it's welcome. It kind of concluded the story and then kind of got off pretty quickly. Because in my head, I was also going, I said, right, I know the story now. Now I know what's happened. Is there going to be a, you know, a
repetition and milking it?
They didn't do that. They didn't. No, they didn't. They just said how it ended and where everybody was, and then they got out. So I thought that was good. So in terms of the way it was produced and the way they told the story, I thought they did a great job.
Yeah, right? Agreed. Yeah.
They used interviews. They actually did the timing of it slightly out of sync with reality to further the story, which I thought was good. And they kind of gave it a first, second, and third act in the way they put it together. So I thought it was really a story really well told using this documentary medium. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. Yeah.
Call me naive, but I was actually a bit surprised when Girl 2 showed up.
Yeah, same.
Because I thought I was actually very drawn into the initial girl story. I was sitting there actually chewing the back of my knuckles, thinking, "Oh no, please no, don't no." And then somebody else shows up, and I'm like, "Oh good God, she's not the only one."
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. Like it just, you know, nearly blossomed the story, you know, because I thought, like Mark was saying, geez, this is going to be the story and they're just going to rehash the whole fucking thing, you know, all the time for the next hour. But then there was so much more.
I thought it couldn't get any worse.
I know, yeah. It's bananas. And, you know, then to see the history of the guy, you know, as that unfolds, it's mind blowing how take a neck this guy has, like, and how
smarmy and suave.
We're digging into the content, which I think is interesting too. But just have one other comment on the way they shot it. Is the documentary kind of piggybacked on a journalist's investigation of the story, which was brilliant because they invested me in the story, right? And then they tried to resolve it. And they stuck us fly on the wall on the people who were trying to do that. I felt really like intense, like we were part of it nearly. So I thought they did a very good job of pulling me as a viewer into the story itself. And then we found out the resolution and then it ended. I was going, geez, that's some story. Like,
yeah.
So Mike, do you have anything else to say about the way it was done? Because we can get into actually talking about it then if you want.
No, I'd agree with most of what you said. I thought it was really well put together. I thought that they did a really good job of making the victims, in particular, personable. You know, you did genuinely feel for them. They weren't just sort of generic stock victims or whatever. You know, they were all quite different in their own right.
Yeah. You can see it happening to anyone. You know, just the way the guy had presented himself and the way he followed on. Absolutely. Yeah. They, you know, why would they question anything? You know, just the way it happened.
It's the first girl who's on Morning AM.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Now she, so, of the two or three, actually, she did seem the more naive.
Well, I think there was hundreds of these girls over the course.
Of the three that we know.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think she was probably representative of a whole swath of women. Yeah. This guy. Yeah. But like, no. So it's very easy, and there was a lot of victim shaming going on, or victim blaming going on about this. But it's very easy to sit back and really badly. Yeah. They showed some of it in the documentary, in fact. But there was
I thought you meant since the documentary came out. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Oh no, there is sense as well for that. But like, you've got someone who hasn't just done this for the first time with you. Like, he's a very practiced routine. He has a supporting cast to help him. Like, you're not just dealing with the lies of one person here. You're dealing with a team of professional lawyers. I should say.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, if there is a genuine attraction there, which is also really good at hiding, you know, deception. If you think you're falling in love with somebody, it's a lot harder to see through things sometimes.
Yeah.
You throw that in the pot, any of us. They're but for the grace of God, go I, you know.
Yeah. What I thought was particularly invidious about the strategy was that they didn't go after rich people. Because rich people would have the resources to say hire a private investigator to find out who this guy really is, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Whereas you and I, Joe Ordinary. You kind of have to work off your instincts and what you can find on Google and whatnot. And your man,
rich people might have antibodies too, from this being tried on them before.
Yeah, it's true. Very true. Yeah.
I was going to say, well, they might even mix in the same circles as he'd be expected to be mixing in, you know, and may have contacts and So it might be part of the strategy not to, you know.
So instead of getting somebody that has assets and stripping them the assets, he gets somebody who has the capacity to borrow. And use that till they're burnt out.
So bad.
That is fucking grade
it's
A.
Unbelievable,
you know.
It's unbelievable.
It really is, yeah. And then, but like, what was brilliant about this as well is you get to hear the things and see the things he was saying because we're in the social media age, and she has all the messages.
Yeah.
The voice memos were brilliant. They brought so much to every scene they were played.
Didn't they? Yeah. In the timeline, you know, perfect. You know, all the exchanges and even the way they recreated the sending and receiving and
I think the way they timed the sending and receiving.
Yes, the timing is perfect. Yeah.
Dramatically well done. It was like, what's coming? What's coming? No.
It's intriguing. I didn't think I'd be I didn't think this would be something that I'd like. I did go in blind. I didn't read too much about it before I went in. I think it's probably the best way to go with these kind of things, you know, so I don't go in with my arms, legs, eyes, everything folded, you know.
Well, I kind of did as well because, like, I read out the synopsis last week, but I thought it was a dramatized thing.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
And when I started watching it, Netflix has up on the screen from the people that did Don't Fuck With Cats. I went, oh, that's what this is. And I went, oh man, maybe I've made a terrible mistake here. And then when I started watching it, I said, oh, maybe I did. Because you remember we talked a few weeks back about this Miami drugs guy, and they tried to do this same treatment of it.
Yeah.
And it was awful. And I said, oh God, I hope. Remember I started counting how many times stock footage of different things. Yeah. So I hope this isn't going to be like that.
Cocaine Cowboys. Yeah.
No, this is definitely a step up from that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, what should we watch?
This one?
For sure, yeah.
The Tinder Swindler.
And that is on Netflix. What else did we watch? Pam and Tommy.
Man, lads, I tell you what, talk about folded arms.
Yeah.
So this is on Disney.
I know.
And when I went into it, like, in my head, I was going, "What the do the boys want me to watch this for?" Like, you know, like, what are we actually going to learn here? Like, how is society benefiting from Pam and Tommy? Like, I couldn't get it. So anyway, I've set the scene for my watching it. Does somebody want to tell us about what it is?
All I knew is that there was going to be a lot of drama. You know, Pam and Tommy historically, and of course their infamous stolen sex tape. So, look, you don't have to watch this to see that. anyway, it follows the story of Pam and Anderson and Tommy Lee's relationship, going back to their whirlwind romance that started with marrying after only knowing each other for 96 hours in 1995, says IMDb. So that sets the scene. So we start this with their carpenter.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of important things to mention about this show, isn't there? Like, their carpenter, played by Seth Rogen, has lost so much weight. It took me ages to recognize him with the mullet haircut.
Yeah. And you know
what? First thing.
The other thing, I didn't recognize him either. And the other reason was because he was really good.
Well, he was acting. He was full on acting.
It's been a while. Yeah. You know,
he does a lot of roles as himself almost.
He does,
That was not the case here. And the second personal point of privilege I wanted to bring up is that if you had any interest in seeing the Winter Soldier's bottom, this is the movie for you. The Winter Soldier, of course, played by Sebastian Stan, who plays Tommy Lee in this.
Yeah, I'm sure there was legions of people on the internet just waiting to see the Winter Soldier.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt. But I remember when I used to watch, it was the one about the Spartacus Rebellion.
Rome.
Oh, no, not Rome.
Spartacus.
Oh God! It was the one Andy Whitfield.
I know the one you're talking about.
Got leukemia and died, and he was replaced in the final season. Blood and Sand.
Yeah,
was the name of a season of it.
Yeah,
it's called Rome, was it not?
No,
Rome was a different show.
Rome was very similar.
Come back to us,
Spartacus.
That's what I said.
It's not Spartacus, but let's call it that. But anyway, I used to keep track when I was watching that of girl boobs versus boy bottoms to see who would win in each episode. And in episode one of Pam versus Tommy, strangely, boy bums wins.
Okay.
Maybe it's because it's on Disney.
It was actually called Spartacus. Yep.
Was it?
I will take your apology formally later, Mark. Thank you.
Very well, Michael. I'll start drafting something now.
Have your people talk to my people.
So Pam and Tommy starts off with the scene with the carpenter Seth Rogen building this fabulous bed in his new house, in Pam and Tommy's new house, to the tune of the two of them up to hijinks upstairs. So after a few hours of this, a few days of this, I think, in fact, Tommy comes down to inspect the work and says, yeah, it's fantastic, but could you move that bed that you spent, you know, whatever number of weeks building, could you move it over there instead? You know, and he's going, but that's going to cost you so much money. And so, yeah, don't worry about that. Money's no object. What did I tell you? And he gets really aggressive, really pissed off. And in this first episode, we discovered that Tommy's quite the ass and a little unhinged and quite possibly...
And see his ass.
Under the influence of, illegal substances. So it's more or less focused on Seth Rogen's character, trying to get his money, trying to do the job without any budget. And he's kind of putting himself under financially doing it. So that's kind of where it starts off. So what do we think?
Absolutely cannot stand the sight of Seth Rogen. So that was a really bad place to start the show for me.
He was in disguise.
Yeah. I was able to sniff out the hideous lack of talent there. But
I think he was pretty good in this though, Mike.
I don't know, Ted. I don't know. There was still a strong hint of Seth playing Seth. I am led to believe that in later episodes there's less of Seth.
I suspect that'll be the case, yeah.
I'm reluctant to completely shit on the series. and partly I was thinking while watching it, this is a classic example of Mark's philosophy of life is remake it with better looking people. I couldn't stop looking at Pam and Tommy and thinking, you guys are so much better looking than the originals.
There's a strong element of that to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So did you get over Seth Rogen being a main character in the first episode?
I forced myself to finish it. If it hadn't been on the list, I would have turned it off.
Yeah. I would have done exactly the same, I'm afraid.
Yeah. you know, because I knew the story, I didn't sense any real drama in it. And the parts that I was interested in are obviously in later episodes. So I don't honestly know if it's done enough to get it over the line, because I know there will be a whole lot of media cray-cray in later episodes that might be very entertaining.
Especially
with like the dawn of the internet. You know, I think that was the first mainstream internet porn.
When was A Weekend in Paris?
I couldn't tell you.
I think you're right. I think that was before it. No, when I Google it, I just get being offered city breaks in Paris.
Yeah.
It's not going to help.
Yeah. But yeah, in terms of internet history, it is quite a landmark. So it's a bit like, what was that show you used to like, Halt and Catch Fire? Steve was big into. It was like landmarks in the internet or landmarks in the history of computing. This has its place there. I just wish they'd started somewhere else in the story.
Yeah, there probably is going to be interesting stuff around the toll it takes on Pamela. And they foreshadowed that with an opening scene with Pamela being on Jay Leno.
Yeah.
So when I saw that, I said, okay, well, there might be a human story here that's interesting. And there was, like, to be honest, it's not the worst story that we're shown in this first episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I couldn't get interested in it, to be honest.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm sort of like, I'm not interested enough in these people.
Yeah.
to continue watching it. Yeah, I'm done. Gave it a shot. Done.
Yeah. So swing and a miss. That's poor form though. If they're trying to, like, your first episode really has to make a statement.
Yeah.
And I think they missed it there, didn't they?
Yeah. What should I watch? Yeah, not really this.
Yeah.
Maybe
The Boys.
We've one last thing to talk about tonight, which is Reacher. And this one, I think Mark should tell us about, because he's got a long history with this man.
I do. So my dad is a huge Jack Reacher fan. He's read a load of the books, right? So he was over the moon when he heard they were going to make a movie about it. And then he was emotionally bereft when they cast Tom Cruise as Jack Reacher. Because Jack Reacher is described in all of the books as a giant of a man.
Mm-hmm.
He's very broad. He's very tall, right? Not in the ways they might describe Tommy Lee as a giant of a man, I'm sure. So Tom Cruise is obviously not. He's in great shape, of course. And he can do great stunts and all the rest, but he's small. He's a small person. So immediately dad was going in with his arms folded. Now, separate from my dad's opinion, I love Tom Cruise. I don't think he can do anything wrong. I thought the first Jack Reacher movie that he did was excellent. I thought the second one was really terrible. So it was to do with. So Alan Ritchson plays Hawk in Titans. He was brilliant in that role. I felt always in that he never had enough to do in that show. So he's playing Jack Reacher now, and he is a monster of a man. He is huge. Anytime you see him on screen opposite anyone, he just makes them look tiny, the same way The Rock does or John Cena does.
Right.
So Jack Reacher is a highly decorated SEAL and I don't know if you would say retired because he's quite young, but he used to work as a military policeman, also a military detective more so.
Mm-hmm.
And in this, so this series, and we're starting to get into my problems with it, is based on The Killing Floor, which is the first Jack Reacher book. So Jack Reacher gets off a bus, out of town, goes into a cafe, and is immediately arrested for a murder that he A, knew nothing about, and B, had nothing to do with. And the story goes from there. Over time, the people involved in the murder realize that he has a special set of skills that actually might make him helpful in solving this, rather than using... trying to make him the suspect number one. So that's the setup. That's where it goes from. I can jump in and tell you. So yeah, I messaged the old boy anyway and said, are you watching Reacher? And he goes, I am. Yeah, love this. I'm a couple episodes in. It's on Amazon Prime. And I said, oh, good. That was fine. So I didn't really disabuse him of any notions, but I read The Killing Floor. I haven't read Jack Reacher books, right? I haven't read very many of them. I've read, in fact, one, The Killing Floor.
This episode, yeah.
And no, the whole series is the story of The Killing Floor.
Oh, okay. No way.
And it's almost beat by beat. And I'm going, well, there's no surprises for me here, right? Now, I know all of our listeners are shouting at their various audio devices saying, but you watched Tweet of Time and apparently you read those books too. Yeah. Like, yeah, I know. And I've spent the last couple of days trying to think about how I can explain this.
But, and we don't talk about Lord of the Rings.
Well, there's Lord of the Rings as well, right? But I think the difference there is the Wheel of Time, there's so much stuff. Like there's the magic and the monsters and the settings that are really, like, I couldn't wait to see how they looked on screen.
Yeah.
You don't really have that with Jack Reacher because they're all fairly banal locations, like a diner, a house, a jail cell, you know.
Yeah.
Are you trying to make the case, Mark, that people should stop reading? Is that where you're going with this?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. That's not where I'm going with this. I'm just saying that if you already know what's going to happen in a movie, it's less interesting. And that's the problem with this TV show, is that I already know everything that's going to happen. Right? The pacing of the episode is excellent and the fight scenes are brilliant. They remind me of Treadstone.
Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne, the Bourne series, right? Yeah. Except imagine if Jason Bourne wasn't Matt Damon. Imagine if he was a giant man. So he's doing the same moves, but people tend not to get up.
They break when he hits them. Yeah.
He just destroys people, which a man that size who's trained to fight would do, which I really enjoy. And so
what happens if Jack Reacher fights the Punisher?
Well, I presume that's one of the events leading to a global apocalypse. It's that and reading from the Book of the Dead, I think, could lead to Armageddon. So if either you've read The Killing Floor or read Jack Reacher and you really like that setting and that type of action, it probably is for you because it's very well put together. Right? They didn't spare the budget on this. But if you're not interested in watching something where you know what happens, maybe not. Mm-hmm. So did someone else watch this? I'm not the only one, right?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
So what did you think, Steve?
I've finished episode 2 and I can't wait for episode 3. That'll tell you.
Ooh, there's a wild card.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're completely obsessed with it.
Oh, very good.
No, I've only seen the Cruise movie and that was average as Cruise goes. But
how dare you?
Well, it is an average of a Cruise movie. You know, he's had better. He's at worse.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
So Steve's safe in the knowledge he's 100 miles away from Mark.
No. I think Mark thought I meant that Cruise is just average in general.
He's never made it. Yeah, he's never made a bad movie. But like on the amazing scale where all of his movies sit, there are ones in the middle. So this is a mid. That was a middle amazing movie.
Yeah. So he's a massive guy. Pretty big massive guy. Until he fell in love with. Anyway, this is more like the Reacher that Mark had described to us when we reviewed that movie.
Yeah.
The Reacher from the books, and he made the same point, you know, that he was supposed to be a massive dude and blah 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 blah. They certainly cast the right guy for this. He is huge. He's huge.
He's so big. He's bigger even in this than he was in Titans, and he was big there.
But he's not just big, he's ripped. You know, that's the other thing. He's bodybuilder size, you know, ripped.
Right into fuck, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And he doesn't just have a particular set of skills. He's got all the skills.
He does, yeah.
You know.
He's even got the crochet, yeah.
Yeah, you can keep your particular set of skills. Oh, yeah, this guy did knit spaghetti if he asked me. Sure. So, anyway, he's good. He's what I like about his character as well, he's not a menacing kind of a guy initially, you know, he's not that kind of a character, even though he's extremely big, but he's...
Get a few drinks in him.
Bring up the hurling match last night. But he's a quiet, thoughtful kind of guy and he gives away nothing. And he sort of sits and thinks and then it becomes evident that he's quite a smart guy and he's quite observant and he's a bit of a Sherlock Holmes head in him. The thing that I think that let this episode down, or the first two episodes down, is the detective in charge of the cases in the small town that he's in. He just not convincing, a little bit over dramatic at times, which is completely out of the character that was initially built for him. It just gets a bit weak on that end. The story's good. I enjoyed that. Fair bit of intrigue, a lot of coincidence, or so we're led to believe. We don't know yet.
Or is there?
Or is there? Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm still watching.
There's a lot of that. I found it a really good book for that, like, because it's nearly like a combination lock of a plot. Gradually, all the pieces click into place, and then it opens, and you go, makes sense.
And I like that. I like the, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns. I mean, there's it's not just one twist in the episode. You know, there's like, I don't know how many, like, there's one in the first 5 minutes, and then there's another one 10 minutes later. You know, you're like, what the hell? You know, no, it's great. It's great viewing. It's great viewing.
There was one scene that stood out for me that was really good character establishment for Reacher, and it was in stark contrast to the Jack Reacher Cruise played. I know we shouldn't really be comparing all the time, but in Jack Reacher, the movie, Tom Cruise gets a bit of grief from some bikers. So he has to beat them all up. Right? In this one, there's a bit of hassle happening out front of a place that Jack Reacher's going into. So Jack stops and kind of goes, what's going on here? And then people debate getting into a row with him and then go, actually, I'm not fighting that guy.
Yeah.
And they don't.
No, they don't.
And it just shows, like, he's not going to go and batter people because he's big. He doesn't need to, you know. Yeah. It was really good anyway. He's like, you described it well, Steve. He's quite cerebral for a giant of a man.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I wish I didn't know what was going to happen, honestly.
Yeah.
Because it's so off my street.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching more of it now.
Off my street. But like, I was looking at, what was that, Mike?
You just have to wait for season two.
Yeah. Hopefully they get a season two and it'll be the next book. And then I'm back in action then.
Yeah. What should we watch? Should we watch this? Definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I think people should, yeah.
Yeah. Mike, get on it. Tell us about it next week.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do, sir.
Good stuff. So, on that note.
So, before we go, Steve, we are on Twitter, like, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested about what we're going to be looking at next week, you can follow us on Twitter and find out. You can tell us what you thought about this episode. You can enjoy our amazing jokes. Or interact with us in any way that Twitter allows. So next week, we're going to be watching the reinvention of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, entitled more succinctly, Bel-Air. And while we seem to be in the mood for reinvention next week, Hercule Poirot takes another step out in a new movie of our new remake of Death on the Nile. And there'll be more stuff too. Follow us on Twitter. Search for What Should I Watch? And you should find us on there. It's at WSIW pod. Just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Go.
See you on Twitter.
That's our PR bit done. Brilliant. Okay. So from Mike, Mark, and Steve, stay classy.
Stay classy.
No effort put in whatsoever.
No.
Like, I'm just disgusted.
No.
Not surprised. I'm disappointed. I'm not even angry.